morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is John Kinney. I represent Mick Bain, who is the defendant in the divorce action, but the plaintiff and appellant in the declaratory judgment action. If I may, Your Honors, I would like to briefly recite the facts of this fairly interesting case. The parties were married in 2006. The divorce decree was entered December 9th, 2015, although the file stamp says December 10th, 2015. The parties had one child, Zoe, born in 2006. The decree of dissolution had some fairly standard language, maybe not perfectly artfully drafted, related to real estate. And in that decree, the parties attempted to deal with house equity and the existing mortgage at the time of their divorce by inserting language that said the plaintiff, the mother, shall have the house refinanced into her own name within 12 months of the entry of this decree. That language was somewhat repeated later in the paragraph. Essentially, the paragraph needed some meaning as to what would happen if she didn't refinance within 12 months. So the real estate paragraph of the decree went on to say, should plaintiff be unable to refinance the house into her own name within 12 months, the house shall be listed for sale and the parties divide the costs or the equity. Your Honor, with that language, I don't think that there is any ambiguity, unlike the case of Carlson versus Carlson, where this court was asked to weigh in on post-majority child support with phraseology such that did appear to be a little ambiguous when I read the case. The child support language in that case said the child support may continue. I think in this case there is no ambiguity with respect to the word within. The word within means within the bounds or confines of, in or into the interior, inside of.
What does refinance mean?
Refinance is a fairly common term among us divorce lawyers, that you have to basically obliterate the existing mortgage and get a new mortgage and remove the other person from obligation on the house loan.
What's the operative verb in this sentence?
In which sentence?
Should plaintiff be unable to refinance the home and so forth? Unable, well, unable to do what?
Unable to refinance the home.
Okay.
Your Honors, I think that the important thing when you look at the somewhat equivocal language and what strikes me and what pops out to me is the word should. I think that sends everybody into a little bit of an ambiguous tailspin, like is that the same as the word may in Carlson versus Carlson? But you have to look at the language of should plaintiff be unable in light of the more clear language, plaintiff shall have the home refinanced into her own name. You have to read the two sections together.
That one doesn't have a temporal requirement at all, though, does it?
Yes, it does. It says within 12 months of the entry of this decree.
Well, did the district court judge make a factual determination here that she, in fact, had refinanced?
What the district court judge did is use contract principles, which this court has said repeatedly is with a court order that basically incorporates a party's agreement, you're not supposed to do. The trial court here said nothing in the language of the decree dictates that time was of the essence. That's a contract principle, and I don't think it should have ever been applied. But to answer your question more directly, the problem with what the court did is it said, well, gee whiz, you made efforts to get it refinanced prior to the 12 months.
Was she able?
I understood, and I thought through that process. She may have been able, but if we think about that logically, okay, when these people were putting together the language of the decree, to say that we're going to agree that all you have to do is be able to refinance, it makes no common sense.
Well,
why would somebody get a divorce?
But perhaps the lawyers involved recognized that in refinancing, you know, the parties are only one part of the equation, and you may not be able to make it go any faster.
Well, then you put in language...
As in the bank and the escrow and the, all that contingencies.
But then you're required to put language into the decree to cover that, those contingencies, that these people didn't do that.
So you're saying it wasn't contingent, you were working on the word should?
No.
As in you should do this? The language scholars may correct me, but I think it's subjunctive.
But it's the focus on the wrong section of the language. The plaintiff shall have the home refinanced into her own name within 12 months needs to be read in conjunction with the later phrase, should plaintiff be unable to refinance. And getting back to the point I was trying to make, if you think about trying to read logic into a court order, why would anybody agree that I can stay on that mortgage for 20 years and maybe not ever be able to buy my own house? As long as you're able to refinance, that's all you need to do. You don't need to close. That's what that thought process, I think.
You think it's just too open?
No, I don't think it's too open. I think to read into this decree that all the wife had to do was be able to refinance is nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense because it has...
But they didn't write if you have not refinanced.
Again, I have to harken back. There's two separate sentences here. Mm-hmm. One sentence is very clear. She has to refinance within 12 months. Now, what I look at is sort of the second phrase is an if-then statement. If you're not able to refinance within 12 months, this is what happens. The operative word, in my opinion, is the word within. It's between two things.
There's a sentence in between the two sentences we've been talking about that says that the provision shall be enforceable by the contempt powers of the court. Is that the remedy that you sought?
No, but I don't think that the decree said the parties are only able to use the contempt powers of the court to enforce this paragraph.
So did we get to a declaratory judgment case?
Actually, if I remember the cases correctly, Carlson versus Carlson tells us you divorce lawyers can use a variety of methods. We've seen a lot of them. I think you mentioned four or five in that case. And you said declaratory judgment seems to be as good as any. And Carlson's a very recent case. So when I read Carlson, I thought, I think I had it right. I think declaratory judgment was the right remedy here because we're trying to interpret a court order.
Why isn't this issue barred by issue preclusion from when you brought the contempt action originally?
Issue preclusion. Well, the contempt remedy doesn't really help, and we dismiss the contempt case without ever having a finding, so there was no final order.
Let me ask you about the facts of the case. Before the 12 months elapsed, did the former spouse have a binding commitment to refinance? And then, under the facts, I'm not asking you to go beyond what the record shows. What does the record show about the existence or non-existence of a binding commitment to refinance done within the 12 months?
Well, unfortunately, the defendant in the declaratory judgment action didn't provide a whole lot of information about all of the efforts. She just simply came to court and said, I've made all these efforts, and they didn't come to fruition within the 12 months. But as far as the record is concerned, I don't think that part of the record matters. The language of the decree is unambiguous. She had to refinance.
Was there some evidence that she had a binding commitment to finance, and it'll go through the system within 12 months?
That the bank had given her a binding commitment? Yeah. I don't remember that from the record. I thought it was just her testimony that, gee whiz, I made lots of efforts, and I think the evidence was I had to make all these repairs to the home, and I had all these problems, and I couldn't get it done in time.
But she had accomplished her improvement of her score in order to get financing. That's in the record, right?
I believe that is in the record.
What effect does your client's actions have on the refinancing?
Well, the notion that my client did damage to the home and did damage to her credit, that was all obviously something that was part of the factual record prior to the decree. If the defendant in the declaratory judgment action had a problem with that, there should have been something mentioned in the decree. The four corners of the decree don't talk about damage to the property. She agreed to split the equity in the house without any reference to damages. I'm assuming that my client didn't do damages to the house after he was excluded from the home and he no longer was living or married to the defendant.
Wasn't this decree entered on a property settlement agreement of the parties?
Yes.
So this is language that the parties picked and
yes.
the court approved?
By the way, the wife's counsel prepared the decree.
Does that matter?
Well, I'm simply saying that if we're going to go back and I'm not sure where this court is going to go with whether we use contract principles to decide this case, but if the court were to go there, I think that language needs to be construed against the drafter, and the person who drafted the decree was the wife's counsel. I'm way over my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Buchanan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Morning, may it please this court. Chief Justice, members, counsel, I'm James Buchanan. I represent the interests of Brittany Payne, who is now known as Brittany Rexius. Words, words, words. Heard that in Hamlet a few times. Plain meaning, ambiguous, unambiguous, within, shall, should. These are all the words that we're looking at today, and these are the words that are being strictly scrutinized and have been for a long period of time.
Are we looking at unable?
Yes.
What about refinance?
Yes, we're looking at all of those. And you're one step ahead of me, as a matter of fact. What the appellant argues is that, first of all, that the court should not have considered anything outside of the four corners of the document, and that the court cannot consider any extrinsic evidence of intent. We agree. We agree that this decree is unambiguous. However, the Declaratory Judgment Act actually allows for a trial to take in facts related to compliance for the decree, and that's exactly what happened here. There's nothing that we believe that the district court did wrong in allowing testimony associated with Ms. Rexius's actions in an attempt to refinance.
What kind of action is this?
This action is a declaratory judgment action.
In the nature of what?
That's a good question. That's what we've been trying to find out as well.
Is it in the nature of contract? Is it the nature of equity? How would, aren't they sui generis? So what's this one
yes.
tell us to do?
Based on reading from Carlson, our interpretation was that since it's a property settlement agreement, it's viewed as a judgment, and therefore, based on our reading of Carlson, it is one rooted in law. It does state in the definition of sui generis whether the subject matter is going to determine, my understanding for what that's worth, is that the subject matter is going to determine whether it's an issue of law or equity. We also believe that when you look at the second sentence, which has been brought up, there is this provision that states that that first sentence is enforceable by the contempt powers of the court, something else that was pointed out in Carlson, that there are alternate remedies available. The district court did not ignore this fact either, and that was one of the issues that was brought up. The appellant even admitted that he did file the contempt after December 9th of 2016, excuse me on dates, and then ultimately dismissed it a few months later. It was not until even months after that when he decided to file this action when she sold the house. Now, the third sentence, and this has also been addressed as well, should my client be unable to refinance the home in her own name within 12 months, then the property is to be listed for sale and the parties equally divide any costs or proceeds, more words, but the cost. I think it's safe to say if this house had been sold at a loss, we probably would not be here because that would have obligated the appellant to probably open up his own checkbook. The listing and selling of the property should only come into play if Mrs. Rexius was unable to refinance. The district court specifically pointed out that her testimony and the facts presented showed that she was qualified before the deadline. She has no control over third parties after that. She believed that she was in compliance. She does not set the closing date.
And what's the evidence that she was qualified?
It was her own testimony. There were no formal documents. It was just based on her character and her submissions to the court. Now, if there is any term that Mrs. Rexius would like the court to consider, it's the word windfall. That's what we believe the appellant is asking the court to find here. A few months after she was able to refinance the house and completely remove Mr. Bain from any obligation, she becomes engaged to be married. And who is her now husband? And again, before this, she's making mortgage payments, she's repairing the damage that Mr. Bain had done, she's making substantial improvements to the house. After she's engaged, they determine the house is not big enough for them and their family. She decides, well after refinancing, that she needs to sell the house. This is after it's been acknowledged the refinancing is done, after the contempt has been dismissed, after Mr. Bain has acknowledged he's been completely removed from any interest on the property. It wasn't until she sold it months later that he suddenly believed that he had an interest in these proceeds. Well, that, in our mind, that it's telling us the appellant wants the court to reverse the decision and say, well, since you didn't close within 12 months, when you sell it, I get half. Well, what if she sold it 6 years from now? Does he get to come back and say, hey, I get half now? Because that's essentially what our understanding would be, a determination here would say, if it's reversed and said, nope, he gets it. He wants the court to find that because she didn't complete closing, an act that she had no control over, to refinance within 12 months, he should get half the proceeds, even if the sale apparently occurs months, years, decades later.
What's your response to the argument that it's illogical to make the triggering event for the last sentence ability to refinance rather than actual refinancing?
I disagree with it being illogical when the terms in that sentence state clearly, unambiguously, should she be unable. It's a very logical, straightforward sentence, and the facts show that she was able. The third sentence, in our opinion, doesn't come into play.
I understand it's linguistically logical, yes. But I think the argument your adversary is making is that it's not logical from a policy perspective.
And that's something that maybe should have been taken care of at the time of drafting. That's the only idea that I can come up with at the time. As for the attorney who drafted the decree, you're looking at it. And you previously saw the attorney that approved it. Maybe next time when Mr. McKinney and I have a few other cases, we'll do a better job of looking things over. But bottom line, the plain reading, unambiguous terms contained within the four corners of the document state that should she be unable to refinance, only then does that, I'll call it punishment, come into play.
So did the judge make a factual determination here that she was, in fact, able?
I believe when you read the order, yes. He clearly stated that testimony provided by Mrs. Rexius stated that she was able to refinance, which...
So where is our standard of review here? Are we reviewing a factual determination, or are we some kind of law interpretation?
That's something I wish I could find in the definition of sui generis as well, Judge, because de novo? When I see sui generis, it's you have to make a complete different determination as from what the, or look at it from the standpoint of a completely different determination what the lower court did. Is that a de novo review? Well, maybe I'm not that good at my Latin. I will acknowledge that. The district court heard every single fact related to her actions associated with her ability to comply with the decree.
Is this a meaningful phrase in the context of this discussion that refinance, whatever that ultimately is, means the home into her own name? Does that suggest that the documents between the ex-wife and the bank just have to put this in her name? Or does that imply that it's all the legal work behind it and the deeds and the whatever other financing pieces of paper are registered in the clerk's office and all that in her own name? Is that inform us discussion?
Yes. Honestly, when you lay it out like that, those are all the acts that need to take place in order for a party's name to be removed from an obligation. In divorce actions, you have a unit, two people that are jointly liable for a debt, and when we're dissolving the marriage, we have to allocate those debts between the parties. Once that unit is dissolved, it doesn't make sense to have both parties remain to be responsible. Therefore, at some point, that kind of debt needs to be strictly allocated to one party, whoever it is awarded to. There typically is steps that need to be taken in order for that to happen, as in refinancing. That can be an assumption, that can be, I'm not into banking, but they have all their forms, they have all their steps, everything that goes into appraisals, everything that goes into credit checks. Those are things, however, that were not directly in the control of Mrs. Rexius. She made every good faith effort starting more than 6 months prior to the deadline to do it and to do the refinancing, she had to, as pointed out, work on her credit rating and pay down debts. That is exactly what she did in order for her to be.
Would it be logical for the debt to be put into her name, but none of the sequelae, like going to the county offices and all that with respect to ownership?
That I'm not at liberty to say. I do not know. I do not know. In my 15 years of experience, I've never seen it done that way, but it certainly opens up a book that direction.
Was there any evidence that the appellant was harmed by the fact, financially harmed by the fact that this refinancing was completed a month later than what he's saying it should have been?
No, as testified to by the appellant. He had no damages. He had no costs associated with repairs, upkeep. The only thing that he was paying on was child support. There was nothing associated with him continuing to pay on any debt or obligation that was jointly held by the parties. When he dismissed the contempt action, is because ultimately there was no damages. There was nothing that he suffered as a result of the closing of the refinancing happening after that December 9th deadline.
At what point in the contempt proceedings was the matter dismissed? The
matter was dismissed about in April. Subsequent, and forgive me on the year.
I mean, during the contempt proceedings, was it after evidence was adduced? Was it before a hearing?
There was no hearing set.
Okay,
no, there were negotiations. And I'm out of time.
Is it a logical understanding of this that if after 12 months has passed and Brittany has not refinanced, that Mr. Bain could bring an action for contempt, and at that point, if she's able to refinance, the contempt proceedings can compel her to refinance. And if she's unable to refinance, then we go to the last sentence and we go through the forced sale. Is that a logical understanding of the language of the decree?
Yes.
And if under that understanding, then what happens under the factual circumstances we have here?
Had it been under the contempt, and she had been compelled to refinance, and she was successful, his name is removed, she may be on the hook for certain damages, attorney's fees, so on and so forth, but the property would remain in her name, or it would have been sold and both parties would have been taken off. But it never got to that point. She was able to refinance prior to the deadline.
What does the inclusion of the phrase, "this provision shall be enforceable by the competent powers of this court," mean in this decree?
When we were drafting it, it was intended to be, and I understand intent is a dangerous word in this situation, but it was intended to be an incentive for her to get it done as timely as possible, do everything in her power to make it happen. Should she have been unable to, or if she's dragging her feet on it, there are the contempt and compel powers of the court to ensure that she is doing what she has been ordered to do under the decree.
Wouldn't that exist even if that phrase wasn't included in the agreement?
Yes. Those types of remedies are obviously codified and traditionally used in divorce actions as well.
Does it mean anything where the parties actually signed the agreement which said this was the remedy that was going to be used?
We believe so, yes. I mean, ideally, it's I guess, presumed in a way that they understood what they were signing off on, what their duties and obligations were under every line of that document, yes. Well, I do believe that their signatures do play a role.
Would that preclude the declaratory action that we're facing now?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that because it's something that popped up into my head the other night, last night as a matter of fact. Once the refinancing was done, does he actually have an interest in the property anymore? Does he even have the ability to bring a declaratory judgment action?
I think that we're looking at it a few degrees differently. Was there another serviceable remedy?
Rather than
declaratory judgment.
That's where we believe the contempt action fell into place, yes. That's what we believe the easy remedy, I hate to use the word easy, the contempt provision, that sentence was there to make the parties understand what they were signing off on was this was the remedy intended, again, bad word for this, but intended to be utilized in the event she did not get the refinancing done.
So the declaratory judgment action simply asked for a declaration that the husband's entitled to one half the proceeds from the sale. Could that same relief have been afforded in a contempt action?
I do believe, yes, if certain steps were taken, if she had been found in contempt due to the fact that she was unable to refinance and the house, the third sentence comes into play, the house is sold, because that sentence states very clearly, unambiguously, costs or proceeds. And if that house had been sold due to the contempt and compel and ultimately came to proceeds, then yes, he would have had a claim to some of those proceeds, whatever that may have been. Thank you very much for allowing me to go substantially over my time today.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal.